come to order at 10 minutes after 8. We have Representative Peterson with us, Representative Gernberg, Representative Vice Chair Paul Seaton, myself, Representative Bob Lynn from South Anchorage. Representative Wilson is excused. She has a bill up in finance. Representative Johnson is excused. Representative Gatto is excused. And nobody else has any excuses. So the first bill we're going to hear is HB 53, Candidates Ineligible for Boards and Commissions. And would the sponsor come forward and bring us up to date to where we were when we left off?
Actually, Mr. Chairman, if that's okay with you, I'm going to let my aide, Priya Keen, sort of give us the highlights of what the bill's like at the moment.
Okay, so regardless of how it goes, she gets the blame.
She gets the experience. Yeah. I get the blame.
Okay.
Do we need to adopt the CS, or is that
well? Yes, I think we should do that. Thank you. We have a. Would somebody make a motion to adopt the CS version E?
Also moved.
Okay. Move. Any objection?
I'm going to object just to know what the differences are.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Priya Keen, staff to Representative Mike Dugan. As you can see, the CS for HB 53 has a few minor changes. The first is the title change has been incorporated, and authorities has been added back, and conforming language has been added throughout the bill. Anytime state board, commission, or commission is mentioned, authority has been added. The second change was something that Representative Johnson suggested during the last bill hearing, and that was to add municipal candidates to the list of those candidates who had to resign their position and were ineligible for service for a year after running for office. It also adds section E2 on page 2, line 4, to include language regarding how a person seeks nomination or becomes a candidate for municipal office.
I was going to add, did anybody contact anybody in the municipal league, about this to get their input on it?
Mr. Chair, I did not contact anyone in the municipal league, but I did speak to Jason Hooley of the state boards and commissions, and he said they didn't have a problem with it.
They would not have a problem. Okay, thank you. Any questions for the sponsor, the sponsor's representative? Is there anybody online? I don't remember if we closed public testimony or not.
Did you remove your objection to adopting the CS?
Who had objected?
You did.
I didn't. I removed my objection.
Okay. I find out we did close public testimony. But even so, I would open it if anybody's online. Anybody online? Anybody in the room? Do you have a comment?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Upon examination of the CS, there was a small typo, so there is an amendment for your consideration.
Oh, I was going to see Representative Gernberg take care of that for us. But
with pleasure. No, this is fine. I'll move. Let's call this amendment number one.
Okay. We're closed public testimony, but wasn't closed before. You remove your objection. I'll entertain amendments.
Amendment number one to page 1, line 11. I think you have that.
Okay. Yeah. Would you explain the amendment?
I'll object.
Okay, objection?
Yes.
For
the, I'm not sure where it's supposed to go, but page 1, line 11, I don't see the word service.
Page 1, line 12.
It's line 12, actually.
So I'll take that as a friendly amendment to the amendment.
Amendment to amendment, change in line 11 to line 12. Without objection, Representative Gernberg. It would tell us why we put delete service and insert serving. Well, I guess it's obvious. Okay. Objection removed. Okay. Amendment 1 passes without objection.
I'll remove my objection.
Okay, good. Any other amendments? Would somebody care to make a motion to... Wait, stand by. Representative Seaton did. I beg your pardon over there.
Turnover. No, I'm looking at my notes. Go ahead.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
I thought we were signaling aircraft and an aircraft carrier. I'll entertain a motion to move HB 53.
Before we do,
yes.
We have discussion.
Yes, yeah, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I am concerned about this bill because it has a huge effect on rural Alaska and those areas that have smaller populations. There's generally a limited number of folks that step up to do service, and I think that this is something that would act as a severe detriment for people for filing for office. Or if they did file for office and didn't win, it would remove from those communities a number of the capable people in those communities. I don't think that the problem that we're reporting to solve with this is as great as the detriment that there would be to rural Alaska and smaller communities. So that's my position on the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any further discussion? Representative Grunberg.
I have a parliamentary inquiry. What is the vote it takes to move a bill from committee? I should know this. Is it a majority of those present or a majority of the full committee?
I believe it's of those present. It is not.
It is not. Mr. Chairman?
Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chairman, a majority of those present is required to adopt an amendment. A majority of the committee is required to move a bill from committee.
And I think that's what our staff has said, too.
So would you repeat that, please?
Mr. Chairman, a majority of those present is sufficient to adopt an amendment. A majority of the entire committee is necessary to move a bill from committee.
So
if I may dialogue for a minute, Mr. Chair.
Yes, please. Representative Grunberg.
We're in the waning days of the session. This is a bill that obviously needs work. It goes from here to the House Finance Committee on which the sponsor sits. And I'm wondering if we can, to expedite things, get a vote of the full four of us here with some commitments from Representative Dugan to work on any problems, if possible, in the next committee so that the bill doesn't move from that committee without dealing with the problems that we have. I'm talking to our representative there right here.
Yeah, it would seem to me that the bill itself, you know, has no problems. The problems, I think, we're talking about is the philosophy of the bill. It's a good idea. Now, I think the way it's constructed in here is rather obvious, but I think it's whether, you know, we think it's really a good idea or not, rather than how it's put together. Would you agree?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And my position is that this is not a financial problem that we're looking at. This is a interrelationship between government and how government functions, which is the review and the that is what state affairs is supposed to do. That is not the job for finance. That is the committee of jurisdiction is state affairs. And I think that this has a very detrimental effect on our state, on municipal, state and board interactions. And so I oppose it for the reasons of state affairs. And
the basic philosophy of it.
Yes. And so it's not a financial consideration. If it was a financial consideration that we were having problems about, I would be agreeable to doing that. But as it is, I don't think that those are the problem the bill has.
Okay. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe the intent of this bill is to avoid any appearance of a conflict of interest for any person who is running for elective office. It's a sort of a last ditch effort, so to speak, to to remove any possibilities of ethics violations, even the appearance of an ethics violation. And I'm in favor of good ethics, so I think there may be some problems with finding people to serve on boards and commissions from rural Alaska that may come up from this, but sometimes you have to sacrifice one thing to solve another one.
Okay. I believe I have a history over some 7 years, you know, either voting for or even sponsoring legislation to remove conflicts of interest or appearing to do it. But I don't think we'll ever be perfect with that. You know, the variety of bills that we vote on here and the variety of backgrounds that the 60 of us here, so there's going to be either conflict of interest or appearances of it. We just do the best we can with the various pieces of legislation that we have. I do have, if I may, a note from Tam Cook, our legislative legal guru here. See, she has I'm going to read. Adoption of amendments or committee substitutes may be done by a majority of the members present, so long as the quorum is also present at the time the vote is taken. Adoption of amendments or committee substitutes may be done by a majority of members present, so long as majority of members are present. We've already done the committee substitute. Three in favor is a minimum if a quorum is present. In order to report legislation from the committee to another committee, a majority of the full membership of the committee must vote in favor. So that would be, what do we have? That'd be a minimum of four people. Is that correct? Please note that the committee chairs have discretion, whether to follow this interpretation of Uniform Rule 24A. So whatever happens is my fault, I see. Would you like to chair the meeting?
You're on the hot seat.
He or she, and it's he, may instead allow for a majority of the members present to report legislation from the committee. A quorum is one half of the full membership plus one. Any comment on that? I don't know that we would be treading on interpretation of Rule 24A. It looks like to me, and I don't know. We have it anyway, if we were to go with it. But I'm willing to look at this. You know, I applaud the intent. You know, I have concerns with it. Speaking personally, I would not vote to keep it in committee. I would vote to put it out. And what recommendation I would put on it, I don't know at this point. But Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for whatever this is worth. And I recognize that I'm not a voting member here, but I don't really believe that the committee should go to extraordinary lengths, which I guess I would see if I were sitting in your seat as being moving a bill out of committee, which clearly you can do in your purview if you'd like. But I don't believe that I would want to move a bill out of committee without a majority of the full committee to do it. So if that's the case, you know, that's fine. I think Representative Seaton is wrong about this, but it's a clear question to ask here.
A policy question.
Yeah, it's a policy question, pure and simple. And if there's not enough votes to move this in the regular way, I don't see any reason to go to extraordinary lengths to move a bill on the 27th day out of its first committee, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I do appreciate that. You know, I really appreciate the thought that's gone into this. With that, I'm going to hold the bill. Hopefully some other members will wander back before the end of session here. So, and when they come back, if you so choose, we can have a short future discussion and take an action at that time if it's the sponsor's desire. Is that fair?
Thank you very much.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I appreciate the sponsor, and I appreciate your indulgence, because when we start interpreting the rules loosely, in one circumstance, we set precedents for all kinds of committees, and all of a sudden, we would have things moving out of finance without a majority of the members there. You could be moving out without any minority members. You could be moving out in many different circumstances in a committee on which that member sits, or a committee such as this. We could do it with without the full membership of the committee. So, or not the full membership, but a majority membership of the committee voting. So I appreciate that, and I appreciate the fact of not interpreting the rules in that manner. Thank you.
It's always been my practice on this committee, you know, when in doubt, you know, try to give the benefit of the doubt to the sponsor of the bill. But I think, and I think we have going by, but I think it's better to hold the bill, and if the numbers make it possible here, and if you so choose, we'll bring it back up for a definitive vote on this thing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much for bringing this bill has generated some very, very good, very, very good discussion, I think. Representative Grunberg.
Oh, coincidentally, Mr. Chair, Representative Dukin, on the calendar today are two of my bills designed to provide vehicles to improve the rules, HCR 8 and HB 128. They're on the calendar today here in this committee.
That won't help this bill.
Yes. No. But one thing that this discussion has engendered, and they're simply there as vehicles for people to bring up suggestions to improve the way we do business here. I've got several suggestions in there, but it's a train, and we can take the cars off or put them on. The problem of the number of members it takes to move a bill from committee has bollocksed up this legislature for several years now. And I think we should consider putting a provision on one of those bills, probably the concurrent resolution.
Well, let's wait a little bit till we get to those bills.
No, I was just going to say that would maybe resolve this so the question would be answered in the rules.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. This bill will be held in the committee. Our next bill, and somehow I'd like to thank Tam Cook for being so so responsive so quickly.
Hopefully she'll be here in a little bit to talk about the bill.
Okay. Do we request do we request that she send us that information, or she just...
Well, somebody did, I think.
Oh,
you did. Well, good. All right. Good. Very good.
That's great. Thank you. For
I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
Okay. Next up is going to be HB 128.
We're not taking the other one first?
No. That's been HB 284. The sponsor sponsored that bill, ask us to hold it this time. They're doing some work on it, I think.
Oh, all right.
And so we're going to go to HB 128.
Mr. Chair.
Which is introduction measured in fiscal notes. Representative Grunberg, if that's your bill, you can...
Yeah, they're both...
You work on it from there, from your seat here, if you choose.
May I ask, Ted Madsen is here. Can we just go off the record for a second, please?
Ted, at ease. Hold 128, put that after HCR 8. We'll be now here in HCR 8. Recognize Representative Grunberg and his trusty assistant. Please give us an overview and then give us your recommendations.
Thank you, Mr.
CS on that.
I believe I have a CS on that also here.
No, we don't.
I don't.
Do we? No. Oh, I've got the bills on. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I have the wrong.
Well, I have here the HCR as a CS that needs to be adopted on version P. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Seaton.
I'd move that the committee adopt version P for House Concurrent Resolution 8 as our working document.
Fine, and I'll object for discussion. Okay. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Introduce yourself, et cetera.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Max Grunberg. I represent House District 20, member of the committee, and I very much appreciate the chair scheduling the bill, and just
as I said momentarily, I'd like to introduce, first of all, my assistant, my administrative assistant, Mr. Ted Madsen, whom I think you all know. And he's done a lot of work on this legislation. And somebody else who did some work on it while he was a volunteer in my office is also here, Dr. Steve Offrecht. If I may ask...
Max? Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Can I, if you turn that way, they can't record me on the speaker.
I would just ask that if Mr. Offrecht has any comments, if he would let...
Well, at appropriate time, we'll ask for anybody in the audience or on the phone to speak to this, as we normally do.
Thank you. We have the P version, and to save a little time, I will ask Mr. Madsen to discuss the difference between the P version and the version as introduced, which was the E version.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ted Madsen. I'm a staff to Representative Max Kernberg. There are a few minor changes between the E version and P version. I believe it's the E version.
Yeah, that's right.
There are just one drafting correction to page 2, lines 21 through 23 of HCR 8, and which become lines 19 through 21 of CS for HCR 8. And that is to change prefiled bills and prefiled resolutions are combined and referred to as prefiled measures. This is one of the main points of this resolution, is to change the references to bills and resolutions to measures. Once again, there's also another drafting correction to again refer to bills and resolutions as measures on page 3, line 6 of CS for House Concurrent Resolution 8.
And Mr. Chair, this is Max Grunberg. Those are the changes on the committee's substitute, and I would ask that objection be removed so we can take that up.
Okay. I move the objection.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe that we have, has an amendment been given out to this, distributed on that yet?
We have an amendment,
where's the amendment? I don't have
to the P version, the representative about joint prime sponsor and co-sponsor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I'd like to do is to, thank you, describe basically what the bill does.
Yes, I'd like to have you give us an overview of the bill, the intent, the purpose of the bill, the philosophy behind it, then we get into the nitty-gritty on it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The overview of the bill, the philosophy behind it, is to provide a vehicle for the members of the legislature to put forth their ideas, how we can improve the way the legislature works. Some of our procedures are
set... I'm in favor of that.
Yeah. And we have a companion bill, House Bill 128. Some of our things are in statute, and that's what the bill's there for. Some of them are in concurrent rules, and that's what, to amend the uniform rules, and that's what this is for. It's a concurrent resolution, but it takes two-thirds of a vote of each House on the floor to do it. It's a supermajority. These things are done not very often. I do not recall, in the time I have served, ever seeing anything quite like this. And it's my intent, and I'm not in any great rush to move any of these bills, to provide through this committee, or if you want to do a subcommittee, whatever you want to do, now and in the interim, a forum, and we'll poll the members and see what they want to do, see what they'd like to have in here, and then we can take this up next year, God willing, we're back.
If we're all back.
Yeah, and really collate these and see what people want to do.
So you're basically just plowing the ground with this.
Yes. And that's what these are, and hopefully Pam Cook will show up at some point.
She'll be online.
Is she online now? Oh, she's online now. She's my only other witness. Really available to discuss any of these issues, and we'll flag the issues and how they came up, and some of them are controversial and some of them are not, and we have one potential amendment which cures a typographical kind of problem, and when we get to that part of the bill, I'll offer the amendment. so we can get this thing in shape and then transmit it around, and I'm just here kind of to help coordinate.
Okay, would you walk us through the resolution, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And if you would like, we have a sectional analysis here that maybe help. Section 1 concerns the withdrawing of measures. And I'm sorry we neglected to give out copies of the uniform rules. We have them here. But you can see the rules because they're just amended, so you can see how they look now. It amends Rule 27B to allow the withdrawal of a member to allow it to be withdrawn that's in possession of the House and before it is moved to the second House. And I believe, and I'd ask Mr. Madsen, I thought we were allowing it.
Could you perhaps just give us a, what do your attorneys call it, hypothetical or anything? Okay, there is a measure in the House on XYZ. Okay, what does this do to that?
Okay, right now, the it specifically says that it may be withdrawn, and I'm on page 1, line 9, by the member introducing or reporting it if consent by the full member of the House.
Excuse me, could you show me, because I'm trying to look at the sectional. Okay, go ahead, please.
I'm sorry. Yes, the problem is that right now, and this is page 1 of the bill, section 1, the language allows, on page 9, allows a measure, and a measure consists of a bill or a resolution, any kind of a vehicle.
Can you just give an example? We have
House Bill 1, House bill. Resolution 1, House Concurrent Resolution,
okay.
House Joint Resolution.
Okay, what's going on? That's been introduced in the House, right?
Right.
And then the sponsor wants to do what?
Withdraw it.
For whatever reason.
Right.
Okay. What happens now and what does this do?
Okay.
Here?
Under the current law, it appears, and Ms. Cook can correct me if I'm wrong, it could be withdrawn even after it's passed the second House if it comes back for concurrence.
Okay. So we've got it passed the first House, then it goes to the second House, and they make some kind of amendment to it, and it comes back. And then the sponsor, for some reason, wants to withdraw the whole thing?
Right. And it's my feeling that that's unfair because the second House has passed the bill. And you can vote it down, keep it in limbo, file, go to a conference committee, refuse to concur. But you shouldn't, at that late date, be allowed to withdraw it because that divests the other House of any ability to, for example, recede from its amendment. And it's by that time, it's in the possession of the entire legislature, in my opinion. And this cures that hypothetical problem. That's my suggestion.
And has this situation happened in real life?
We'd have to ask Ms. Cook. I don't know that it has.
Ms. Cook, are you online?
I am, Mr. Chair.
First of all, I'd like to thank you for your help on the previous Representative Dugan's Bill, you're right there to help us, and you gave us some good advice. I want to thank you for that.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Okay. Has the situation Representative Gernberg described, has that happened where we get a bill, a resolution, it passes the House, goes to the Senate, it passes there, and then for some reason the original sponsor said, I withdraw it, and everything is for naught? Has that happened?
If I may, Mr. Chair, that type of a motion has been made, and let's see, I think it has either been, in one or two cases, the House has declined to allow the sponsor to withdraw the bill, and in a couple of other cases, it's been negotiated so that somebody else stepped forward and agreed to carry the bill. Offhand, I can't remember a time when the bill was actually withdrawn at that point, but it may have happened.
Okay, and so what he suggests here, is this feasible from your point of view? Is it feasible? Could it be done, and would you think that'd be an appropriate thing to do or not?
Mr. Chair, I think it's probably appropriate that it be done. What it does, what this would do is prevent placing the body in the awkward circumstance of having to deal with a member who wishes to withdraw the bill. And I, boy, I don't know offhand that a person has succeeded in withdrawing a bill in this status after it's gone to the second house and been passed successfully very darn often. Usually it has to be negotiated out and someone else will step in as sponsor and they'll withdraw sponsorship but not withdraw the bill. The downside from the point of view of individual legislators, of course, is that some legislators may feel so unhappy with what the second house does to a bill that they actually are trying to remove the bill as a vehicle. This would prevent, this approach that Representative Gruenberg is suggesting would prevent that possibility.
I see. So they wouldn't draw the bill, but on the concurrence, they could obviously vote no if they so chose.
Mr. Chair, they could vote no, and in my experience, the House has been incredibly lenient about allowing people to withdraw as sponsors rather than withdrawing the bill.
So I guess this comes down to a policy. Is it better policy than what we have now or not? And I guess that's the debate.
Yes, that is the debate.
Okay, any comments from...
Do you want me to pass on the rest of
No, don't pass on, Max.
I won't.
We wouldn't have a quorum.
No, we wouldn't have a quorum then. Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, I think I understand what Tam Cook is telling us is that in the hypothetical, you might have a bill that passed the House, went over, was totally stripped. Something else that you're totally opposed is in there, comes back, it still has your name on it. So the remover of your sponsorship, the bill is still there, the number's there, but you would no longer be a sponsor and somebody else would pick it up. Or in this case, there would be no ability to even propose withdrawing the bill. And so the sponsorship change would be the only vehicle that would be available. The vehicle of trying to withdraw the bill would not be available.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gruenberg.
And, of course, you could always just ask the majority leader just to keep it in limbo and never bring it out, too. I mean, that's always...
But that would be only the majority leader thought that was a good idea.
Right.
So if that would happen to me, for example, I could totally divorce myself from the bill and not have it go out in the public that I sponsored this bill that I'm totally opposed to.
That is correct.
Any Representative Peterson? No?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It seems to me that so the decision we have got to make then is whether we think it's better to have one member have enough power to try to withdraw a bill that's been passed by both houses versus just allowing him to take his name off the bill and allowing that bill to have an opportunity at concurrence or final passage. So that seems like the choice. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Sounds like it could be a good idea to me.
I think it probably is.
What's your...
I think that this would, to me, this clarifies what we're already doing. I mean, my understanding is that, you know, you can withdraw a bill while it's in your house. Once it goes to the other house,
you've lost possession.
You've lost possession of it. You couldn't do anything while it wasn't in your possession. But if it passed and came back, then it would be in the possession of the house again. However, you know, I think the one thing is that we are counting on the body being courteous enough to change sponsorships, and I think that is something that would normally be accorded members. So,
but we couldn't.
I think that
this would guarantee the quote courtesy. Well, you could in fact totally disassociate yourself from the bill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, there's nothing in here that guarantees that you can change sponsorship. That's the courtesy that is negotiated. I think Tam Cook was talking about was negotiated between members. The one person removed their sponsorship and somebody else took up that bill that was in favor of that bill when it came back. So I don't think that there, you know, maybe Ms. Cook could inform me if I'm incorrect, but I see this as just clarifying that you can withdraw the bill before it passes from your house. Once it passes from your house, basically the entire legislature owns the bill, not just your house, and yes, therefore withdrawing the bill would not be appropriate. That clarifies that. It does not clarify or mandate sponsorship removal, but I think that that's been a courtesy that's generally extended.
Sometimes courtesies might have to be enforced. Representative Grunberg?
Two things. Ms. Cook, and well, first I'll bring a policy question to the folks here. And I really appreciate your taking the time on each of these, because they're standalone things, actually. It's just melded together in a bill. Right now, I say, while the measure's in the possession of the House, it may be withdrawn at any time. That would allow one of two things to occur. After the people have voted, and let's say somebody, I'm going to give you several hypos.
Let's say it goes through two or three different committees.
I'm talking about now after the final floor vote, focusing on then.
And it's still in the House.
Yes, still in the House. There has been a floor vote. The bill has passed. And for some reason, either immediately thereafter, for some unknown reason that we can't fathom what people will do, or on reconsideration, the one member who sponsored it decides he doesn't like the bill anymore, but the House has voted to pass it, and it's still in the possession of the House. Or the bill has gone over to the Senate, and for some reason, the presiding officer has asked to have the bill come back.
To the House.
Yeah. In either of those cases, the full House has voted, and I'm wondering how the members would feel of changing this to, instead of, quote, while it's in possession of the House, to say before it has been voted on by the full House. Because it seems to me, and I'm just thinking this through, we thought a lot about this, but obviously we haven't figured every permutation in this. Changing this to say after it's been voted on by the full House or passed by the full House, because it seems to me we focused on the second House, because the first House no longer has the bill. But do we want to expand, prohibit the withdrawing of the whole measure after the full House has voted to pass it? Now, just a thought. I would accept either way.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I wouldn't want to see that expanded. I think a member does not get to withdraw a bill. He can make a motion to withdraw a bill, and then there must be consent, a vote of that House to withdraw the bill. So if the House doesn't want to void their vote, then they wouldn't withdraw the bill. So I think the protections are already built into the language as it is.
Okay.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now, I was going to ask the sponsor, currently a member who has sponsored a legislation can take his name off as the sponsor at any time, or what type of consent has to take place for that to happen?
Could we ask Ms. Cook? That was my second question, if I may dialogue with Ms. Cook.
Yes, please.
Tam, this is Max. What are the rules on taking your name off a bill? Is that something in the uniform rules?
That is actually not really addressed in the uniform rules except obliquely. However, it's been done very often. A change of sponsorship is what we call it, and it's been done by simple majority vote of the members present, the quorum being present. Now, we do have one reference to changing the sponsorship of a bill, and oddly enough, it is the one amendment that can be done in third reading rather than in going back to second reading. Even in third reading, the body has the right to change, if it chooses to, by majority vote, the sponsorship of a bill. Furthermore, we've got in that strange little rule a provision that before the bill is engrossed, it can be changed as to the sponsorship only. So when it comes to sponsorship, by implication, the uniform rules are very, very broad with respect to the ability of the body to elect to change a sponsor.
So the original sponsor can withdraw. Does it have to be another sponsor, or can it go forward with no sponsor?
If I may, Mr. Chairman, yes, there must be a bill sponsor. A bill cannot go forward, at least under the world as I know it, without a sponsor. And so generally, if a bill has picked up some co-sponsors, one of the co-sponsors very often will agree to step in and in the sponsorship role.
I see. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Cook, this is beyond anything you and I had talked about. It's really an important concept. Do you feel we should make any of the things you've stated here, put those explicitly in this? Make that, put those in the rules, that there must be a bill sponsor and or anything, to follow up on Representative Peterson's concern, should we clarify any of that in the bill? Oh, okay. Yeah, if we look on page 2 of the bill, Mr. Madsen, if I could turn it over to Mr. Madsen here.
Mr. Madsen, please.
Yes, we're skipping ahead a bit. This is, for the record, Ted Madsen, staff representative Grunberg. If we're skipping ahead a little bit, we're going to skip section 2 and go to section 3, and it's on page 2, line 27, and this is amending rule 37A, which is has to do with the sponsorship of legislation, and it says that measures, this is part of the amended language, measures introduced by members must have at least one prime sponsor or more than one joint prime sponsor and may have co-sponsors. And this also deals with the withdrawal of names from sponsorship of legislation as well.
And Mr. Chair, it may be appropriate if we may have a little latitude in dealing with the bill. I have an amendment that deals with that. Actually, we should wait till we get to that section.
Yes, let's do that.
Ms. Cook, back to you, if I may. Do you think there's anything we need to clarify any of these rules to cover these issues that Representative Peterson and we've talked about here?
If I may, through the chair, I don't think that you really need to with respect to bill sponsorship. It seems to be inherent in the body of the uniform rules itself, and we do have the one rule that discusses changing of sponsor in even in third reading. It's clear that the rules contemplate that sponsors may be changed and that a bill will have a sponsor.
Reverend Grunberg.
For the record, Ms. Cook, could you cite the rule, to give us the citation on that rule?
I will look for it, and it may take me a minute to find it.
Or we could get that in writing.
Let's move ahead.
Yeah, we could get that in writing, Tam, if we could.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair and members of the committee, excuse me, I have to go and attend a hearing in the other house. And so I'm going to have to sign off now.
Mr. Chair?
Well, I want to thank you very, very much. Representative Grunberg.
Ms. Cook, could we maybe get Jack Chenoweth or somebody? Would they be able to step in and answer some of these questions?
I can try to do that.
I'll go ahead in the meantime, yeah. But it would help us.
Yeah, let's progress on down the road. Thank you again, Ms. Cook.
Yeah,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, next thing, we're still on Section 1 of the bill. Lines 12 to 14, it provides that only the prime sponsor, a joint prime, with the agreement of all the other joint primes, or the chair of the committee that introduced the measure, may move to withdraw it. And that specifies who may do it. Because previously on lines 10 and 11, it was unclear because there may be more than one co-prime doing it, since we now have co-primes, and they should all have to join in if you're going to withdraw the measure, because that's important. They're all co-owners of the bill. And when they talk about the member introducing it, or if it's introduced by a committee, it's technically introduced by the committee, not just by one person, although that person may be acting on their own, but it's in the name of the committee, and reporting it. That was vague to me because that would appear to allow a bill that was introduced by me and reported out of this committee, allow the chair of the committee to withdraw the bill.
withdraw your bill.
Yeah, and that didn't seem fair at all to me, so this clarifies it.
Any comment on that? Okay, let's move to the next change. This is very interesting.
Here, if you follow along on the sectional, it deals with the pre-filing of measures. And I'll ask Mr. Madsen to introduce that.
Give us a page and line number, please.
Yes, this is page 2, lines 1 through 23.
Okay.
It has to do with, and there are a number of technical clarifications to allow for the substitution of the word measures in for bills or resolutions. And one of the major changes is that it allows for the pre-filing of any sort of resolution. And currently, there are only joint resolutions that deal with constitutional amendments to the state or federal constitutions allowed. However, this amendment would allow for any sort of measure to be introduced and pre-filed.
So you could pre-file on a bill or a House resolution or a joint resolution.
Or a concurrent resolution.
A concurrent resolution.
And any kind of joint
Anything.
Resolution.
And if we may talk about that, yeah. Mr.
Chairman. And then what would be the advantage of that? Why is it the way it is now, and what would be the advantage of changing it?
Mr. Chair, I talked. And
Representative Grunberg, identify yourself, please.
Yeah, this is Max Grunberg. Mr. Alford, did we talk to him about that? We didn't. Okay.
If we need to talk to him, we'll bring him up here, but this is very difficult for the clerks over here.
I'm sorry.
You know that.
Yeah, I was trying to see if he could add anything.
I know, but you know it.
I do not know why it was so limited. I have felt the limitation, and I'm sure other members have as well. It doesn't seem to me in this day and age there is any good reason why you cannot pre-file a simple resolution, a concurrent resolution, or a joint resolution, which is usually addressed to Congress or something else. And I think there are definite advantages in doing it. And this is one of the provisions in the bill I thought was a very helpful reform. Because when bills are pre-filed, they're made available by title and everything to the public and to other members of the legislature several days or a week before the session begins. And this gives people time to think. And a lot of times, the first things or the things that people think about in the interim have to do with events that are occurring, like, let's say, congressional action or inaction, for an example. And we need to get a message to Congress quickly on how this bill that they're considering will adversely affect Alaska or whatever. And it would be a good idea, it seems to me, to get those taken care of in a pre-filing, get your co-sponsorships, co-primes lined up, and those could be taken up relatively simply early in the session when there's not a lot of substantive stuff going on. And it would help so we don't get bollocked up later in the session dealing with that. Move these things through, and I didn't see any good reason not to allow those to be pre-filed.
It seems to me with that advance period, when you pre-file resolution or a bill or anything, it gives you an opportunity. The discussion begins then in the public and among members of the legislature. And that could prompt some potential amendments before we actually come into session. It would kind of expedite the process so the amendments would be ready on the first day it goes to a committee. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering, you know, there's a fairly short period of time when these bills are pre-filed, and I was wondering if Ledge Legal might be overloaded with work as it is, because as we all know, the first few days of the legislature, there are not uncommon for 100 bills or somewhere around there to be introduced. And if we start adding resolutions, I don't know if they have the staff for that. Maybe we could ask them to give us some advice on that.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I think that Representative Grunberg is right in one respect, is that resolutions are responding to current events and and things that are happening, and I'm, instead of looking at legislation pre-filed for consideration, I agree with Representative Peterson that we might be talking about the political situations and all those things that are generally handled in resolutions that become a big argument and et cetera. The resolutions can come forward. They don't have to go to any committee. They can be signed right to the floor. They can go to one committee. They don't have the normal process of trying to attempt to have them
policies
by at least two committees.
Scrutinized.
So I guess I'm questioning whether this would be efficient or whether it would interject a lot of emotional things instead of real policies into the pre-filing time. So I have questions on that. I haven't decided yet, but I do share the concerns of Representative Peterson. I do understand where Representative Gruenberg is coming from. I just haven't decided. Thank you.
Representative Gruenberg.
First of all, do we have anybody yet from Ledge Legal on? Okay, I'm sure she's going to, hopefully she'll get somebody. Since we're not going to move the bill today, maybe Representative Peterson can remember, and when we have...
We need to make note of all the things we discussed.
You're doing that.
And then do what we can between now and the end of session.
Secondly, if I may, okay. Secondly, with respect to the workload, if somebody wants to do it now, what they do is they introduce it on the first, they'll still have it, all the work done. The only question is whether it's, quote, pre-filed or whether it doesn't go into the hopper until the first day. It doesn't really affect when the work is done. In fact, it may have the opposite effect if we don't permit this, because then everybody will delay doing it until just before the session starts, because they know that it can't go in until the first day anyway. This would, I think, encourage them to spread the work out a little more, but certainly wouldn't make any difference. It's not going to deal with the workload of the...
Because we have it anyway.
Yeah. It's just you've got to delay it until the first day it goes in, which really doesn't start the public notice until that day. Nobody knows about it, and then everybody has to find out about it, and particularly either in a 90 or 120-day session, there's not that much time, and this will allow for a greater period of public notice. And so I don't think it will affect much the work of the Ledge Legal folks.
Because they're there anyway.
Yeah. That's number one, Mr. Chair.
Well, a lot of us play the game. The sooner you get a bill being drafted, you get a lower number. And so, lower numbers tend to have priority over those with higher numbers, right?
And that would allow you to get a lower number, too. Although traditionally there aren't that many resolutions, but they seem to let us focus early, and it would hopefully allow the committee chairs, who were set up generally after the election in November, to start planning their schedule, so we don't have as much downtime at the beginning of the session. Number two, so I would hope that would answer, at least from my point of view, your question. Number two, this discussion is very helpful to me because it brings up other issues. Like we talked about the number of members needed to pass a bill out of committee. I think that should be clarified. Number two, there's no requirement now that a House resolution, and I don't know, I'd like to have Ledge Legal, I don't know if there's a requirement for a concurrent resolution. I think for a joint resolution there is a requirement that it be referred to a committee. And I think this committee, our committee here, should consider amending the rules to require even House resolutions to be referred to a standing committee, unless they're extraordinary circumstances.
But extraordinary is in the eye of the beholder.
Well, I'm just thinking conceptually.
Are we still on Section 2, Mr.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm kind of walking through this, but I'm sort of flagging that for Ted, that may be something we'll think about. May I continue?
Please.
Okay.
Are we still on Section 2?
Yes, sir. Ted, what's the next thing this does?
The next thing that this does is, this once again, Ted Madsen for the record. This is, the next thing that it does is allows a member or member-elect to request...
Where are you?
This is page 2, line 9.
Line 9, okay, go ahead.
A member or member-elect may request a sole prime sponsor no more than 10 measures, and they can be additional, the joint prime sponsor of an additional 20 measures for pre-filing. This does two things. One, it allows members-elect to request pre-files, because right now it's a little bit murky as to whether or not they can or cannot request pre-filed bills.
I believe when I got elected, you know, the first time, I had some pre-filed bills right off the bat.
Right.
Before I was sworn in.
But currently it's not in the rules that they can explicitly do that.
So it's permissive rather than required. They allowed me to do it.
This will clarify that.
Okay.
I think that's always been the intent, but I think we need to just, so there's no question, say that a member-elect can do it.
So.
And Mr. Chairman, on that.
Representative Seaton.
I don't think that that's been the policy that members that before they're ever sworn in can sponsor bills. And so we'll have to find out.
Yeah, that's a factual thing.
Ms. Cook.
Yeah, I think I did.
You'd make a note of that.
Yeah.
Including my infamous longevity bill. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe that I was co-prime on a couple of bills before I was sworn in, but I was not the sole sponsor. So maybe that's the tradition, is that if you're a member-elect, you are not allowed to be, you know, a solo sponsor of a bill, but you are allowed to be a co-prime with someone. I'm not sure. I'm just throwing that out there.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, well, in some degree, actually, everybody, if you're reelected, you're in a manner of speaking, you know, a member-elect, although you're currently serving on the previous term.
That's true.
Mr. Chair, when I was first elected in 1984, I introduced House Bill 5, which was the bill to remove asbestos from the schools. I know I pre-filed that. If we could continue, but this will clarify that.
Yeah, let's get this answered before the next hearing. Go ahead, sir.
This section also deals with the fact that you can be the sole prime sponsor of no more than 10 measures for pre-filing and a joint prime sponsor of up to an additional 20 measures for pre-filing. Currently, you're only allowed to have 10 measures either as the sole prime sponsor or as the co-prime sponsor.
So I can do 10 now. Would change it to the 10 plus
10,
resolution.
10 being the sole prime sponsor plus another 20 where you're the joint prime sponsor.
See, Mr. Chair, right now you can only have your name on a total of 10 bills. And sometimes people...
On 10 pre-files.
Right.
Whether they are a prime or co, or co-prime.
So you could be the 15th member and it would still count against your 10. And what that does is it may be unfair to the person, and the person, the 15th person, may have been really working on the bill, but they have 10 other bills that they're the sole of. And what this does is says, if you're the sole sponsor, you can only have 10, but if other people's names are on it, then you could go up, and we've just picked an additional 20. Now, admittedly, this would allow you to do 10, and then another 20, and you could have Representative Lynn and Representative Seaton even be the first on those. But as long as there's somebody else who's the co-owner, co-responsible person, you'd be okay. And it's just a suggestion.
Well, so the total number of prime or co-primes would be what, 20?
30.
30?
Yeah. And that's just a number I pulled out of the hat.
Okay.
But I know that people... and Tam would be able to tell us, or the chief clerk could tell us, have bumped up against this and have had to take their name off bills or delay for one day filing the bills.
And what is the philosophy behind a limit on co-prime sponsorships anyway? I never understood why. Representative Seaton?
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I had 30 bills that I wanted to introduce, I could introduce 10, my own, I could get Representative Peterson to be a co-prime on 10, and I could solicit your co-prime on 10 more, and there would really be 30 bills that I would be introducing and getting one other member in the body to sign on with me. And it seems to me, Mr. Chairman, that the problem is that you would have some members that would gin up a ton of bills or 30 bills over the interim, and we could just be
inundated
with pre-filed bills that I don't see why we would want to do that. I mean, I think 10 bills is quite a few bills, and going beyond that for one member, we get a lot of diversity.
Well, and you know, we can have the pre-filed bills, but we can still file bills after we come into session up until almost the end of session when they cut off individual bills. I think that was just a week or so ago.
Right.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe the reason that they have got a limit on the number of bills that someone can sponsor is because there's really only so much work and time available to when you're to carry the bill. I mean, if you're the prime sponsor of a bill and you get three committee referrals and you have 10 of those bills, you're talking about a lot of time and prep to get those to do a good job to present those bills to the committees. And so I think that was the original intent why they limited it to 10. But having 20 co-sponsorships where someone else is the prime sponsor and actually is actually carrying the bill, I don't see where that it would make that much difference.
And you probably discovered by now, typically, the other prime co-sponsors typically don't do that much.
That's correct.
That's reality.
Well, yes. And Mr. Chairman, the problem is that the prime co's all own that bill legally. And so if they're not doing the work, they shouldn't be prime co-sponsors.
Well, that's true, but I'm talking about what really happens, not what should happen.
Well, I guess my problem is that we're saying, oh, people should put their names on lots of bills, 20 more bills, and sign up for those bills before they, by title, instead of by the active bill itself. And so I think that, you know, the other thing that we had Representative Dugan here earlier talking about wanting to make sure that we didn't have too much political process. You know, if you have 30 bills and you've gone through an election thing, you could be looking at people filing a lot of bills for constituents and those kind of things, because there's no limitation on them, basically. And I think that that might mean that you're not focusing on the most important issues for the representative, but almost doing these by request, and then we just could clog up a process.
And also, while you brought that up, I know we have some bills by request. Mm-hmm. Is that covered any place in the rules of procedure? What these? I know in practice what by request is, but that specified someplace exactly what that is and exactly what that means.
Mr. Chairman, are you referring to by request of the governor?
No. I'm talking by request of constituent Joe Blow. He has a pet project, and he wants to do it by request.
Do we have anybody yet on from Ledge Legal? Okay. I believe it's there in the rule. I can't quote. Maybe you can make a note.
Let me find out later.
Yes.
Always curious about that. And that typically is a bill that the official legislative sponsor is not that keen on, but he's, in a manner of speaking, keeping his constituent happy.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah. Representative Johnson put
it. Wait, say, don't blame me, blame my constituent.
Yeah, he put in the tip credit bill by request. That's
who did?
Representative Craig Johnson.
Okay.
That's the one I'm thinking of. Yeah, it was to respond to what you folks have, members of the committee have said, one time there was a representative who served one term, named John Lindauer, ran for governor.
I've heard of him.
And during his one term, he put in 75 bills. And I don't know what happened to any of them, but I do remember that was noteworthy in the press. And they, people could do it now, they just can't do it as a pre-filed bill. And the thing that I'm concerned about here is that when people are co-primes, and one of the things we haven't done with the bill is said, could you be able to co-prime, should you be able to co-prime something, even if it's not pre-filed? I've never really figured out why it was limited to pre-filed, and that may be something the committee wants to look
at. I'd like to investigate that. You know, is that in a later part of the bill?
No, we didn't do anything with that.
Yeah, let's consider that.
Okay, we will do that. But the purpose was that it seems to me that basically we're getting three classes of folks. The prime, what there's only one, co-primes, and then co-sponsors. And that sort of indicates a level of involvement. I would like to
see... We also have a committee bill, which our committee bills, the whole committee, but typically is either chair or one very active member of the committee who's using the committee bill because they don't want to have an individual name on the bill for some reason, or it's past the time that you can do personal bills.
Yes, that's another category. But I would like to, I was encouraging here, people to seek and get co-sponsors, co-primes. And this, I thought, was a way of accomplishing that. And I don't know how we would guard against the problem if a person puts in a zillion bills, but I don't think that really makes any difference. They just put it in on the first day of the session anyway.
So I know there have been some discussion about limiting the number of bills that you can file, but I've been philosophically opposed to that because I'm a representative, and some bill could come up at any time on any subject and it would need to be filed. Now I couldn't do it.
Yeah, as a sponsor of this, I would oppose such an amendment.
Well, and I would too. But I'm just saying, but that subject has reared its head from time to time.
May I continue since we're working?
Yes. Bill?
I think that's basically everything in Section 2, Ted, am I right?
That's
okay.
Correct.
Moving to Section 3, Mr. Madsen.
This deals with the sponsorship of legislation, and it is the lines 27 through 31, and then on page 2, and then lines 1 through 2 on page 3 are added additional language to Rule 37A. And one of the major changes is that additional members, this is lines 30 through 31, additional members may be added as joint prime sponsors or as co-prime sponsors. So this is after the pre-file deadline has passed. You can be added a representative, maybe added as a joint prime sponsor.
I was wrong in what I just said. We did cure that in the bill, didn't we?
We did.
Okay. So you can correct me if I'm wrong at any time.
Make a note of that. Go ahead.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, as I read this, then the prime sponsor or all the joint prime sponsors must agree to having someone as a co-sponsor.
But don't we have an amendment for that? We in their
well,
packet.
What's that now?
We have.
If you read, Mr. Chairman, on page 2, lines 29, it says the last three words, with the approval of the prime sponsor or of all the joint prime sponsors. Additional members may be added as joint prime sponsors or as co-sponsors. So as I read this, you could not sign up with the green sheet as a co-sponsor on a piece of legislation. You would have to get approval of the prime sponsors or all of the joint prime sponsors.
You mean as a regular co-sponsor?
That's correct.
What's the purpose of that? Because we sign the green slips all the time.
Right. Well, that
Mr. Chair,
Reverend Gruenberg,
that is something that is a flashpoint. we had an amendment prepared for the companion House bill to give the members of the committee the choice of whether you'd need to get all the co-primes to be added. And that's an amendment that's to the House bill. And maybe if we want to not have everybody have to give permission, we could take that as an amendment to this. It doesn't make any difference. I'm just offering these as
vehicles. Let me make an inquiry right here. As of today, some bill comes forward here. You know, we may decide to sign a green slip, which is a regular non-prime co-sponsorship. Usually, I have had on occasion when one member refused to allow me to be a regular co-sponsor on one of his or her bills. And I was a little shocked about the whole thing. But, and I got a ruling on that, I think from Tam Cook, and I forget what it was. But I couldn't do it at one point, but at another point, I think I couldn't do it before his ready cost, but I could after his ready cost, or something like that. Do you recall that? I'll give you specifics later.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
For someone to sign up as a prime co-sponsor on a bill to be pre-filed, you have to have the agreement of the prime sponsor or the prime sponsors that are already on there. After bills are introduced, it has been tradition that people can sign up as co-sponsors. As I read the language as it's written, you could not do that without the permission of the prime sponsor of the legislation.
You mean of a regular
co-sponsor? Of a regular co-sponsor.
So I guess technically speaking then, you cannot sign a co-sponsor unless the prime sponsor permitted it.
Well, as I'm reading the language on line 31, I believe that's what it says. I'm not saying that that's what it is intended to mean. It may be what it's intended to mean,
but that's on the proposed legislation.
That's correct. Line 31.
Not what it is today.
That's correct. Line 31 on the proposed language.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to flag this, and when we have Tam Cook, because I think this may need some work, and I may not have chosen the best path to a solution.
Yes, I think the whole thing needs to be cleared up.
Hey, can we pass?
Yes, please. Can you?
And by the way, once again, here it says, and the language is on page 3, lines 10 to 12. This once again goes back to the withdrawal of your name as a sponsor while it's in the possession of the House. And I do not know, and we can ask Tam, Ted, why we put this language in here when it's already covered in the other Rule 27, but we'll check into that. So may we continue, Mr. Chair? I don't know why it has to be in two sections, but we'll ask Tam. Do you know?
Rule 27 deals with the withdrawal of measures. This rule deals with the withdrawal of sponsorship of the measure.
Oh, the measure, yes, you're right. This is talking about withdrawing your name. And this clarifies when you can withdraw your name. Thank you. Yeah. So I think this may answer a previous question of this committee. And I apologize for not knowing the answer to all these things.
Go ahead.
Okay. Let's go to Rule 4.
I'm adding notes.
Yeah.
All right. Rule 4 concerns the first reading of a bill or a resolution. Currently, as it stands right now, the Secretary...
Where are you located?
My apologies, Mr. Chair. This is Section 4. It's on page 3, lines 13 through 24.
Page 3, line 14. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And it on lines 10 through 12, where it says a member may move to withdraw the member's name as a sponsor of a measure when it's in the possession of the House in which it was introduced. That is, what's the difference between that and the original language that was about withdrawing the bill, and this is about withdrawing the name as sponsor. the question is, it doesn't, in Rule 27, it says you must have the approval of the House, the majority of the members of the House. This doesn't indicate whether you need approval of the members of the House or the member can just withdraw his name without approval of the House.
May I respond?
Representative Grunberg.
It requires a motion. May move to withdraw. On line 10. That's very clear. We could certainly add with the approval of the House, but when you say use the word move, that means a motion that must be approved by a majority of the members present. And that's why we use the word move.
And Mr. Chairman, I would just suggest that as this goes forward, if the language is necessary on 27B, if the consent is given by a majority of the vote of the full membership of the House, then that probably should be, if that's the intent here, or if the intent is the majority of those present, I think that it should be clear what it means.
Mr. Chair, as a matter of parliamentary law around here, a motion just requires a majority of those present. And except for one or two other specific motions that Tam mentioned when she testified before, unless there's something very specific, under our rules, a majority of those present is all that's necessary. That's all that's intended here. If you wanted to say a majority of those present, we could do it, but that's not the way these are normally drafted. She drafted this.
Okay, continue, please, somebody.
Thanks. You want to continue? Okay, now I want to interrupt Ted here for a minute. These provisions, sections 4 and 5, the remainder of the bill, have engendered some debate. And I just wanted to introduce them today because the Constitution requires that the bill be read 3 times. And that has been interpreted in the rules to require the title. And we have looked at I have the legislative history, and we've looked at how other states, and they talk about this in Mason's and Sutherland's statutory construction. The question is, the purpose of these provisions is so that things aren't rushed through and people know what's before the body. And that's why they say that the bill, and they've talked about the title of the bill. What we've attempted to do here is deal with a growing practice here that because people in the past 20, 25 years have started tacking amendments onto bills, and I won't point any fingers. And the bill titles have gotten longer and longer to prevent that. And I have seen, and I remember Senator Eliason had a fishing bill of some type, that the title was a page and a half or longer. And the clerk at the last 2 times the bill was read droned on in a boring monotone for some time. Now, it doesn't happen too often, but this would give the presiding officer an appropriate case to give the clerk the hook. And so they could say, because everybody gets the whole bill and they know what it is. And
yeah, the bill is the title.
Yeah. And I mean, admittedly, when people are watching on TV, they wouldn't get the entire title, but I don't think that they mostly get it from a page and a half of monologue anyway. And it would just allow the speaker or the president to truncate that in an appropriate case. And I do not think that would be unconstitutional. I think my view would be a court would say that is a political question. The legislature makes its own rules. And as long as there's adequate notice here, they couldn't say an act relating to the, thank you very much. They'd have to say something. The title, but enough to give public notice, and if it's a long title, they could truncate it and stop the members from opening their mail and stuff and get on with the debate.
Okay, that might have some problems. Representative Seaton.
Sure.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, I might just add that as a thought, you might want to put that in for second and third reading, but so that it is, the title is read at least once to the entire body. So the first reading would be the full title, but after that, the could be truncated.
Let me just ask a question of the members who are here. This was simply thrown out. Would the members like me to strike that section or limit it to the first or just leave it? What do you folks want?
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with the representative from Homer that the first reading is probably, it's important that it be read across so that everyone gets a chance to at least have an opportunity to listen to what the bill is, you know, supposed to be intended to do. And then for the second and third reading, an abbreviated title would be allowed. I think that makes sense. It saves time. It's easier on the clerk. And so I understand where you're coming from on this.
And this doesn't happen that often. We get some long titles sometimes where the clerk has to take a deep breath.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The current rules allow for the second reading to occur in the same manner as the first reading. So if the first reading was by the full title, the second reading, of course, would also be by the full title.
But the third title might be abbreviated.
Right, the third one could be abbreviated.
I think we've got the gist of it. Let's move ahead to the next section.
Mr. Chair, that's the end of this bill. And I would say, if you folks do want to do what Representative Seaton was talking, we could just take an amendment to delete Section 4 from the bill.
I'd rather hold off on that because I think, we have, obviously this is not going to go anyplace because it's so complex and so late in our 90-day session. We may want to have some kind of a subcommittee for the interim. Of course, there's no guarantee that any of us will be back, nor is there any guarantee that any of us will be on the same committee or chair of the same committee. Who knows? But still, I think some work needs to be done on this. So whoever survives to the State Affairs Committee next time, either as a member or as a chair, can have some background on it. What do you think?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
When we do, I'll work on another CS. Do you want me, I will just eliminate subsection 4.
At your option.
Well, that's I'll exercise that option.
Thank you.
And then I have an amendment here that is the only amendment, and
would you like to move your amendment?
Yeah, let's make that amendment. As a matter of fact, Mr. Chair, I was going to say I would move the other one as an amendment to just delete Section 4. And that way we have some record of what we've done.
All right.
Okay.
Make two amendments.
Okay. Amendment number one I'll make is to delete Section 4.
Okay. Any objections? There are no objection. Amendment one passes.
And then the second is this this typed amendment, page 3, line 11. And I would ask Mr. Madsen to speak to that.
Thank you. This is adding a few lines to page 3, line 11. After sponsor, we also wanted to add in joint prime sponsor or co-sponsor in there so that it was clear that if you were any sort of sponsor, you could remove your name from the sponsorship of legislation. And then we also wanted to include the cross-co-sponsorship in there as well. So that's why on page 3, line 12, after introduce period, we inserted a member may move to withdraw the member's name as cross co-sponsor of a measure when it is in the possession of the second house.
Any objection? There are no objection. Amendment two passes.
Now, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
We've talked about, the Dugan situation, the paradigm there. How many members it takes to move a bill from committee. And I hadn't thought about that, as we were drafting.
Why don't you work on something like this? But I think what I'll do now, because this has been very, very instructive, very interesting, and I think the whole thing needs to be pursued.
We'll get a CS.
It's not 9:35. why don't we hold this bill and then move to just introduce the other bill.
Thank you.
And then I will bring back one or the other or both of these bills and maybe appoint a subcommittee for the interim.
Thank you.
To work on this. But I don't want to appoint some subcommittee now because so many people from the committee are absent and they can't defend themselves from being appointed to the subcommittee.
And Mr. Chairman, just for the committee to indicate to Representative Gruenberg, you know, if this comes back, I'll make an amendment to remove the extra 20 prime co-sponsors.
Okay, let me just ask the members here. Do the other members feel the same way? Because let's take an amendment now and we just do it.
Well, I would rather not because it's an important thing and we have the very important members absent from the committee and it's worthy of more discussion, I think.
May I have a committee CS prepared with the two amendments in it?
Yes.
Now, can we go to the other bill?
Okay. So we're holding whatever this is.
HJR 8.
HJR
8.
8. I'm going to go to HB 128. Please introduce HB 128. I did it very brief. I don't want to spend more than 5 or 10 minutes on this.
I'll ask Mr. Manson to.
Okay. Please introduce HB 128 so we can have as a bill previously heard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Ted Madsen, staff to Representative Gruenberg. This is HB 128, an act relating to introduction of measures and to fiscal measures. This has to do with Section 1, deals with the idea that the prime sponsor of a bill or all joint prime sponsors acting together may prepare a fiscal note in conformity with the requirements of the section. This allows for the introduction of fiscal notes. It's fairly self-explanatory. Currently, sponsors are allowed to introduce fiscal notes on bills or resolutions. This just allows all joint prime sponsors acting together to introduce a fiscal note as well.
Okay, go ahead.
Section 2, which is page 2, or page 1.
Excuse me, Representative Seaton.
Yes.
So the definition of prime or joint primes are going to be for pre-filed bills or for all bills. Is the sponsor of a bill the prime sponsor of the bill under legal term?
This deals with fiscal notes.
You have these.
Right now, there is no provision in here on what to do with prime sponsor, with co-primes. So this would be new ground here. Because the co-primes are not, that's a relatively recent addition to the rules. And we have, so I can't tell you what the practice is, Representative Seaton, but I can tell you it's not in the rules. And we have a possible amendment here because, not that I'm going to offer, but I'm going to, it's a choice for the committee and it's on Section 1.
All right. Yeah, let's do that in the later.
I just want
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And my question was where we're talking about prime sponsor of a bill, is that language only used for those that are pre-filed, or is okay? So we are talking about a sponsor of a bill that wasn't pre-filed can no longer do a fiscal note because it's only prime sponsors or joint primes.
Well, under this version,
okay.
Under the amendment, it could be the sponsor or a joint prime.
Okay.
And that may be a better approach. Tam and I just drafted both of them so the committee could see which way they wanted to go.
Thank you. Please proceed quickly, because I want to adjourn in about 5 minutes.
Okay. All right. Section 2, which is lines 9 through 15 on page 1 and lines 1 through 16 on page 2, deals with the requirements of a fiscal note, and it just adds in the name of the prime sponsor or the names of the joint prime sponsor. That's lines 10 through 11 on page 2. And in addition, it requires the name, electronic email address, and telephone number of the person who prepared the fiscal note. Currently, the electronic email address is not required on the fiscal note. For whoever prepares it. Section 3, which is lines 17 through 21, just requires that copies of the fiscal note be sent to each of the, to either the prime sponsor or to each of the joint prime sponsors. All right, section four, just a moment, please, Mr. Chair. Section four deals with the pre-filing of bills and resolutions.
By the way, this talks about...
Representative Grunberg.
This talks about a member-elect on line 25 being able to file a bill. Go ahead.
All right. This allows, obviously, it increases the language of members-elect, and it also allows, it clears up in section... It just does that. I'll move on to section five.
It allows the member-elect specifically to pre-file.
Good.
All right. Section five, which is lines 3 through 26 on page 3, this section B here allows the governor to explicitly to be able to introduce resolutions as well as bills. Currently, there's some discussion as to whether or not the governor can introduce by... request to the Rules Committee resolutions.
Right now they can't.
I'd never really thought about that.
But, you know, particularly we've had a lot of situations where we've been calling on endangered species and stuff, the Congress or the administration, the presidential administration, to do certain things. This would allow the governor to file, by request of the governor, a resolution. And I think the governor should definitely have that power.
That is very interesting. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. On page 3, line 5, I guess what you're doing here is allowing prime sponsors throughout the legislative session instead of being on pre-file bills. Because you're saying a group of members can file a bill, so therefore at any time you would have a number of prime sponsors. Is that
correct? And that is concurrent with what we did in the resolution. This marries them up.
Yes, and I'd always been irritated that I can't get prime co-sponsors for some great bill I come up with in the middle of the legislative session. Now, please continue. I want to bring this to a rapid close.
That's it.
That is it, Mr. Chair.
That's it?
Yeah, that's it.
Thank you very much. I'm going to hold this bill. When the full committee comes back, we're going to discuss having a subcommittee to look at both the resolution and this bill during the interim. And I'd like to have people think about who might like to be on that subcommittee. As always on the subcommittees we've had here, I've always invited those not on the official subcommittee to participate, but I want to assign a subcommittee, because I think these are some very important questions. There may be other things we want to change while we're at it. In for a dime, in for a dollar.
Mr. Chair, at some point, you might want to yourself or have the subcommittee send a dear colleague letter to the members, other members of the legislature for their input, too.
That would be good, but the subcommittee would be of the State Affairs Committee. Okay. Thank you very much. Two very important, interesting pieces of legislation you brought forth here. Our next meeting is this Thursday, the 25th. Same time, same station, 8 o'clock. We're going to start with a short overview of the Division of Elections. Then we're going to hear from Senator Menard on her second verse of the Alaska State Song. And perhaps bills previously heard, if time permits and the composition is correct. So any other business to come before the State Affairs Committee this morning? If not, thank you, everybody. And we are adjourned at 9:45. Set a record.